want your soul.
$10 million. They say everybody has a price, and that was apparently mine. That's what it took for me to abandon all my ethics, caution, and respect for human life. And I'm here to tell you, it still wasn't worth it. Not even close. Mr. Minkowski sat across from me, my cluttered office desk between us. "I want you to fix my son," he said, looking me directly in the eyes. It was silly, but I felt like I was back on the schoolyard 40 years ago, getting stared down by the class bully just before he pantsed me. I shook my childish intimidation away. Mr. Minkowski was a billionaire, a very wealthy man, but he was still just a man, and he was in my office, not the other way around. "Yeah, and what's wrong with your son?" I asked. "Well, what isn't wrong with that little asshole? For starters, he's a goddamn runt. Asthma and big glasses and buck teeth and you fucking name it, okay? So you think the kid at least be smart, right? But no, he's no good at sports, he doesn't have a chance with girls, and you'd think he'd bury his big ass crooked nose in his books. Maybe get into software developing, shit like that, but you'd be wrong. This little fucker is an idiot. He could barely stand his mother. He barely even knows his multiplication tables. 8th grade reading level, and he's 15 years old, Doc. Now I need some help, and you're just the doctor to do it." I shifted in my seat. "I presume he has some disorder that makes him a candidate for gene therapy then?" "Well, that's the thing, Doc." Keeping his eyes locked on mine, he went on. "We've had him tested, and there's nothing wrong with him, apparently. Other than the asthma and every fucking allergy known to man. Oh, there's nothing wrong with him, they say. And there's everything wrong with him. You see what I mean? He ended up with all the shit genes, right? Again, from my wife. He got unlucky. But you know what? When you've got all the money that I've got, luck doesn't mean shit. And that's where you come in. Now, I'm here to write you a check. But I need you to do something about it."
I see.
"Well, I'm sorry that you wasted a trip down, Mr. Minkowski, but if your son doesn't have any disorder that's been approved for gene therapy, well, I'm afraid I can't help you." "Now, wait a second, Doc. I'm not talking about ordinary gene therapy, okay? I'm talking GTCA final phase CRISPR. I looked at Mr. Minkowski and then frowned. "How do you know about final phase?" Mr. Minkowski then smiled. "Oh, I see. You think that it's because it's a top-secret government project. I couldn't possibly know about it, right?" "Doc, I am the fucking government. Nothing happens in this country that I don't know about. I'm the top 1%er, and most of the time it happens because I say it happens. So I want you to put my moron son in the CRS-IPR, or however the hell you're going to do it. And I really don't care how you do it. Just fix him. Change all of his genes to good ones." "All right, listen. That is not how it works," I said, looking down at my desk. His stare had become unbearable. "In certain cases, simple medallion disease, well, that is the entire goal of the project. We could possibly do something for your son, even at his age. But what you're talking about, you're talking about very complex polygenic traits that we're not even close to understanding. It just doesn't work that way." "Oh, cut the fucking bullshit, Doc. Come on. I've read the articles. You think I haven't done my research? You think I don't know who you are? That I'm some idiot? You guys have hundreds of IQ genes, hundreds of height genes. I'm not asking for some super genius NBA pro athlete, okay? I know you haven't found them all, but you found enough to make a difference. You found enough to make my son normal, haven't you?" I lifted my eyes then and returned his gaze. "I'm afraid that you've made a mistake, Mr. Minkowski. There have been numerous genome-wide studies that, yes, find statistically significant associations between certain variants and phenotype outcomes. But I want to stress the word associations. And as far as we know, there's absolutely no causal relationship between these variants and the outcomes. we're not that far down the road yet in the trials to draw those types of conclusions. Well, you know what, Doc? It's the best shot I got for fixing my embarrassment of a son, so I want you to go ahead and do it. I don't give a fuck where you are in your trials. I came here for you to do it, and I'm going to pay you good money to do so. I see. Well, you're not listening, sir. We don't know what will happen if we start messing with thousands of variants in your son's genetic code. We are not even close to understanding what exactly the function of these variants are or how they interact with others. $10 million. That's just for you, Doc. I'll cover whatever other expenses there are, of course. $10 million fucking dollars. You got that? It'll change your life. That's a chunk of change, even for me, but I figure the ROI is going to be pretty goddamn high. This little shithead will bankrupt me and blow the family fortune. Do you understand that? Do you know what kind of problems we have now? This is my only son, heir to everything. He's a fucking idiot. Now, I know you're going to fix it, because I'm going to make you very rich. And I know that they pay you good money here, but they ain't paid you that much. $10 million. The mention of $10 million and him repeating it over and over had started to make me a little lightheaded, and still I kept my composure. You understand that there's absolutely no way to tell what will happen to your son if we do this. The most likely outcome, I'm afraid, is that he might not even come back alive from the procedure. Well, and I'm okay with that. And don't worry if shit hits the fan. I'll have my lawyers draw something up, absolving you of all responsibility. I know there's some risks, but for fuck's sake, Doc, once you see this little asshole, you'll understand. He's worthless. Well, I gotta try to fix him. It's my fatherly duty, as you can imagine. In hindsight, it is clear to me that Devin Minkowski didn't have the mental acuity to consent to the procedures. I mean, of course he didn't. How could he? Even if his IQ had been considerably higher, what 15-year-old boy can wrap their brain around the complexity of this genetic code? Most adults can't even do that. They don't really even understand their own genes and heritage, let alone consent to changing it. Nevertheless, when Devin agreed to the procedure, saying that he just wanted me to fix what was wrong with him and he didn't care if he died, I told myself that he was willingly consenting. The money had bound and gagged my conscience, which should have been screaming in horror at the atrocity I was about to commit. But instead, I told myself that I have a family to think about too. And if the child wants the procedure despite the risks, then I'm doing a clear good thing. To tell you the truth, it's incredible how easy it is to rationalize away the worst actions. The treatments went on for a year, and on the last day of them, I hid away in the bathroom and cried tears of relief that Devin had made it through it all alive. I knew that we weren't out of the woods yet, but that he had survived in the first place did wonders to relieve whatever was left of my conscience. I dried my eyes and returned to my office, where Mr. Minkowski was waiting for me. You know, I gotta say, Doc, part of me wonders, did you even do shit? Or have you been putting me on this whole time? My fucking kid looks exactly the same. Still dumb as a sack of flour. So tell me right now, and I don't know if you're full of shit. You jerking me around? I assure you, Mr. Minkowski, that the procedure was a success from my end. You can easily compare Devin's before and after SMPs and see for yourself. As I told you from the start, the outcome of this procedure would be completely unknown. It was always quite possible, as I had explained, that there would be no observable change in Devin. If there is a change, it is likely to take some time to manifest. DNA, as you know, is instructions, and not a completed construction. It takes time. You know what I think? I think I just wasted $20 million, didn't I? Mr. Minkowski was frowning now. Nothing happened to this kid, goddammit. And on that note, he stormed out of my office. I wish that nothing had happened, because that would have been a blessing in disguise. At the one-month checkup, it was apparent that Devin's hair was growing lighter, from a deep red to a rusty blonde. Freckles were disappearing from his face. By month two, his vision was growing sharper, and he needed a weaker prescription for his glasses. By the third month, he had grown 4 inches taller and was now able to wear contact lenses. His hair was completely blonde and most of his freckles were gone. It went on and on like this. Then his asthma cleared up. His grades improved dramatically. and he kept growing taller and taller and came to even have 20/20 vision. Somehow, his teeth even straightened out. I was amazed, and Mr. Minkowski was delighted. We convinced ourselves over a $3,000 bottle of scotch that we had made the most important scientific breakthrough in the history of mankind. No more disease, no more problems, no more stupid people, as he put it. The possibilities were incredible to imagine. But still, there was the smallest part of me that would not let me rest easy. That part shut up completely when Mr. Minkowski announced that he was giving me a $5 million bonus. You earned it, Doc. You're a goddamn miracle worker. And who knows how many millions, billions, you saved me in bailing that kid out of trouble. So take it, and take ownership of this. I know we're still a few years out from when you can tell the world, but once you do, you're going to be a fucking legend. I smiled at him, my head light from the scotch, the money, and the feeling of success. I felt like a legendary doctor. I sat in my office with Devin Minkowski across my desk from me. It was the last of his monthly checkups, and after that, he was to see me once a year. I was amazed at how completely he had been transformed in the course of a year. It was as though that Devin sitting across from me now was a completely different Devin than the one that I had seen a year ago. He retained only a few traces of his former phenotypes. "You must be relieved, Doctor," said Devin in his now deep, soothing voice. His stutter was completely gone. "Oh, yeah, well, I'll miss seeing you every month, Devin." That's not what I mean. I mean, you must be relieved that you didn't have to kill me. You know as well as I do that that was always the most likely outcome, given our present knowledge of genetics. Are you not happy with the procedure, Devin? You know, it's funny, Doc. The one thing that hasn't changed about me is my memory. I still remember everything in that crude, impressionistic manner in which I used to experience my life. I remember the day I met you. I remember how scared I was, but overpowering that fear was hope. Hope that if I did this, my father would love me. And you know what? It worked. He loves me. He's proud of me, finally. And it's all because of you, Doc. I smiled. In a few years, Devin will tell the world about you. Then it won't be just your father that loves you. The whole world will. Devin returned the smile. Yeah, that'll be nice. But listen, I want to thank you, formally. I want to do something special for you. No, Devin, you don't have to do that. That's hardly necessary. Oh, I want to. As a matter of fact, I've been planning it for a month. He then reached down onto my desk for a pen and a pad. He wrote down an address in perfect handwriting. This is our house. Be here at 6 p.m. tonight, okay? And please bring your family. You have a wife and a son of your own, don't you? Please bring them. Don't eat anything beforehand either. It's going to be a very special evening. I looked down at the paper. Okay. All right. Yeah, sounds great, Devin. We'll be there. By 6:30 p.m. that night, we were all seated at the Minkowski's massive dining table. Devin walked around the table, pouring out a dark red wine into our glasses. Mom, he asked, standing in front of his own place setting. It's okay, right? Just one glass in celebration? Oh, I suppose it is, said Mrs. Minkowski. Just one, though, Devin. That's all. And doctor, you wouldn't leave your son out of the toast, would you? Please, Dad, said my son. I nodded, and Devin poured the wine in and then went back to his seat. A toast, said Devin, holding up his glass. To scientific progress and to the good doctor. Cheers, said Mr. Minkowski. I smiled as we all clinked glasses, and then I had a sip. I cooked dinner myself, said Devin. We have chefs, you know, but I dismissed them for the night. It's amazing, really. Even cooking has a genetic element to it. I don't know what it is exactly, but I can tell you that last year, well, I could hardly assemble a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It smells delicious, said my wife. He really is amazing, said Mrs. Minkowski. Now, you mean, Devin said. He really is amazing now, right? Well, before I was a piece of shit. Ain't that right, Mom? Devin, said Mr. Minkowski, you should all probably take a deep breath and enjoy this moment. In a few seconds, the tranquilizers are going to hit. Maybe you can feel them already from the wine. Oh, no, doctor, there goes your son passing out. I looked over as my son's head dropped. his face slamming down onto the table. I began to stand up, my heart pounding, but then it hit me too. I awoke, unable to move or close my eyes. I was sitting in a theater, staring up at a screen which projected my own image back to me. I was bound to one of the chairs, my eyelids taped open. A device was positioned above my head, and it dropped water into my eyeballs every few seconds. There was a gag tied around the back of my head and stuffed into my mouth. The image on the screen was live footage from the camera strapped to Devin's head. Devin was standing on the floor below the screen. To one side were four people, also bound and gagged. My son, my wife, and Mr. and Mrs. Minkowski. And to the other side was a table with a tray of surgical tools on it. I struggled to cry out, but it was no use. "Ah, the good doctor is awake," boomed Devin's voice over the loudspeakers. He was talking into a headset. I watched as he walked over to the table and picked something up. On the screen, I could see what he saw. It was a scalpel. Devin picked it up and turned his head so that the image on the screen was my son. Tears were now streaming down his face, and my son's head grew larger on the screen as Devin approached, and then it filled the entire screen. I watched helplessly as the scalpel caressed my son's cheek, and then Devin pressed it down until a spot of blood appeared. "I've been studying your family, Doc, while you slept, and this is what I've observed. Your wife, she has a truly beautiful face, but let's be honest, she's grown a little flabby down below, you know what I mean? I mean, given her sheer size, I don't even know if I'd want to fuck her. And meanwhile, your son's face is a bit smashed. But what a body. He's so athletic, like a lean and hungry animal. So I'm standing here looking at them, and then it hits me. What if I cut off her head, and I sew it onto his body?" I couldn't believe what I was hearing. What the fuck is going on right now? The camera, which had been alternating between my wife and my son, swung out back towards me and onto the screen. I saw myself pale and sweating. I screamed uselessly in my head, "Please stop this." So, I was getting ready to go ahead with the procedure. "Have a nice little surprise waiting for you, Doc," when you woke up, and then something hit me. A real mindfuck of a question. If it's her head on his body, then who is it? Is it her or is it him? Is it a they? Or is it something else entirely? These days, who can be sure, you know what I mean? Devin looked again from my wife to my son. "Speaking of mindfucks," said Devin, turning to his father. Mr. Minkowski's face appeared on the screen, trembling as much as the restraints would allow. "This guy right here, who is he? Is he my dad?" "I don't know. If we went on Murray and they ran the test, what do you think they'd find?" "Probably that he's not my father, but he feels like my father. The man I loved for the first 15 years of my life. The man who never loved me back, though. But you know what? Now that he finally does love me, I don't love him. I don't want it to feel like he's my father. So I need to make a change. And I'm standing here thinking, what's the defining feature of my father? What can I change that will make him not be my father? And I've got it." The camera slowly panned down Mr. Minkowski's body until it reached the crotch of his pants, which was saturated with urine. "Aha! It's his big fucking balls," said Devin. "That's his defining feature. He's got huge nuts. It's what he himself attributed his success to. He's always carrying on about how big his fucking balls are with his business deals. I've listened to this man talk about his balls for 15 years now. And since that's all he talks about, huge fucking balls. That's how I've gotten to know who he is. I'm just going to have to cut him off." I tried to turn my head away. I tried to close my eyes. I was in total shock. I felt dizzy and I tried to will myself unconscious, but none of it worked. And as I unavoidably watched Devin perform surgery on his dad, I tried not to vomit, but that didn't work either. Bile leaked out around my mouth and dripped down my chin, and Devin worked mercifully, as though this 16-year-old boy had been a skilled surgeon his entire life and began cauterizing the wound. His work was finished. He stood up and looked up again at Mr. Minkowski's face, which was now unconscious from pain and shock. "Ah, so how do I feel?" Well, it still feels like this asshole is my father. So we're going to have to try something else, doctor. But what do you think it could be? I've already cut his nuts off. Devin then turned back to me and began walking up the theater aisle until my own face filled the screen. Ah, I know, he said, the camera gazing into my eyes. If I can't escape my father, then I want him to look like he really is. My mother, too. I think I want you to turn them into pigs, doctor. Legit, oinking, filthy pigs with snouts and everything. And I want you to see them eating shit. But keep their memories in there, like you did with me. You know what I mean? That way they can remember who they were while they're pigs. You can do that, right, can't you, Doc? I mean, you can do anything. I imagine you could do that, couldn't you? Devin traced the bloody scalpel over my cheek, and for a moment I prayed that he would get it over with and just cut my throat. But he didn't. He moved it down and cut away my gag covering my mouth. I coughed the bile out of my mouth and took a deep breath. Doc, now tell me you can do that, right? Tell me. It wouldn't work, Devin, I gasped. Well, I have faith in you. Just look what you did to me. I mean, come on now. It's time to perform surgery on them and scientific experiments, and now you just can't do it? I mean, what the fuck? It's impossible, I tried to explain. With you, I just switched around some variants, all within existing human parameters. But I can't put a human being inside of a pig's body. Oh, yes, you can. And you will, if you ever want to see your family again. I mean, I'm going to take them with me. They'll be well provided for, don't worry. In fact, they may never even want to come back, especially after I get done banging your wife. I give her the fucking she's ever deserved. But if you fuck up, they die. Do you understand? I'll kill them both. Okay, I understand. Well, that's a good doctor, because I'll be taking my parents with me as well. You let me know when you're ready for them. I imagine you have some research to do, but don't take too long. It would be very bad if you took too long. You have 1 year to complete this task. It's been 8 months, and all I have to show for it is a sickening pile of dead mice. Once, I thought that I had gotten one of them to grow a snout, but it turned out that I had merely created a new, deadly, inflammatory disease. I'm at the end of my rope, and near the end of my money, too. My desperation has brought me to the no-sleep forum, just to look for other ideas. And an internet search led me to a story about a man encountering a giant chicken man. And that turned out to be, for reasons that I won't get into, another dead end. But as I read more stories on the no-sleep forums, and I listened to creepypastas on Mr. Grinless's YouTube, I realized that people have encountered all sorts of amazing things. I'm open to anything. A scientist out of the mainstream who had maybe been performing some unnatural experiments. A witch with a spell to turn the Minkowskis into pigs. A deal with the devil, even though I felt as if I've already made one. Anything. I know that I am responsible for this ungodly situation and I do not deserve any sympathy, but my family is innocent and I'm not sure how to get out of this. A couple of nights ago, I attempted to make a chicken cashew dish. I skimped on the ingredients and didn't plan the timing very well while I was cooking. I was rewarded with a mess that was both mushy and tough and mostly inedible. A couple of years ago, I added a few thousand nucleotides out of the billions in Devin Minkowski's genome, recklessly risking his life. My motives were purely selfish, and what emerged from that procedure was a violent psychopath focused on exacting revenge on his father for not loving him for what he was before. What comes out is a function of what goes in. I say this as a scientist and a human being. We reap what we sow. Whether it's chicken cashew or gene sequences we can't understand, we reap what we sow. For 8 months, Devin watched me. He had some kind of surveillance on me no matter where I went and in our communications. He would constantly remind me of this by dropping some mundane detail of something that I had done that day. How was the Cobb salad today, doctor? He would say. Meanwhile, I had no idea where Devin or my family was holed up. The fact of Devin's surveillance alone cut off many of my options. Even without that particular imbalance, Devin held untold advantages over me in the form of billions of dollars and the personal connections that came with that money. To give a small example of this, the one time that I met with Devin in person at a cafe, he brought along two bodyguards. I also know, or at least strongly suspect, that Devin had many high-level officials and professionals in his pocket. If not, then how did the fictional boating accident that killed Devin's parents so easily become a fact? I did toy with the notion to modify my own genes in order to make myself more intelligent and outsmart him. I thought that could be one way to end this nightmare, but I abandoned it for a few different reasons. First, it would take too long. Second, I already possessed most of the variants that I had edited into Devin's code, and so it was unlikely to see a massive improvement for me to outsmart him. But I continued to revisit the idea, and I opened up Devin's case file again and spent several hours poring over it. Maybe there had been one tweak which had been a bit dramatic, a rapid difference, and maybe it was one that I could make to myself. As I was looking through the file, which included a series of photographs, I marveled again at how completely different Devin had grown in the course of a year. Almost nothing about him was the same. And then, there in my house, which felt both empty without my family and intruded upon by the hidden surveillance equipment, I had a realization. Almost nothing about Devin was the same. And that meant that some things were. 2 days ago, I found an article written by a man named Eli Kuhn. My curiosity grew as I read his writings. He appeared to be an experienced biologist. It looked as though that he had found a way to successfully graft pig appendages onto humans, and I thought that this might be acceptable to Devin. It sounds terrible that I was excited about the prospect of grafting a pig's nose and ears onto a human head, but you have to understand the alternatives were not good. It was also better than actually turning the Minkowskis wholesale into pigs, and it was certainly better than the murder of my wife and son. As I continued to read Mr. Kuhn's writings, my stomach dropped. Eli was no biologist, at least not in an ordinary sense. He was into some dark and horrible stuff. I read in horror as Eli described drugging his assistant, performing some sort of unholy ritual, and turning her into a monstrous deformed pig. I thought of that poor woman screaming, trapped in the body of a pig, and picked up my phone to call the police. And then I thought for a minute. This is what I asked for. And I put the phone back on my desk. I did this. I then got up, dizzy, and poured myself a drink. And then I took a shower, thinking about what I was going to do. I just wanted it to be all over with. I just wanted my family back. I dried myself off and then messaged Devin with a link to Eli Kuhn's articles. Even after my shower, I felt dirty and hungry. I hadn't been taking care of myself since that terrible day at the Minkowski Theater when Devin abducted my family. I decided that I needed my strength to do what I was about to do, but when I looked through the cupboard, there was no food there. Devin called me while I was at the grocery store, picking out chicken breasts for dinner. "Oh, this could work, doctor," he said. "I need to put my eyes on it, make sure it's real, finish up your shopping, and then head home. There will be a package there for you. Why don't you go ahead and contact this Mr. Kuhn and see if you can set up a meeting? I already know his address. It's only a 5-hour drive for you. But I would prefer if you could make it there tonight. If the pig story checks out, I can book you a hotel nearby and be on a plane and in the area by morning. I'm just as anxious to have this done and over as you are. My father's whining has already grown intolerable. And frankly, I'm thinking about cutting his dick off next. Do you have any questions for me, Doc?" Yeah, I do, Devin. What if this guy's a serial killer?" I asked as a woman pushed her cart by me, staring. She could have been one of Devin's agents, or she could have been startled by the flash of conversation she just heard. "What happens if I go there on your behalf and I'm killed? What happens to my family then, huh?" "Listen, Doc, it's in their best interest that you stay alive. And mine. That's part of what the package is for. You're prepared to pay the price he's asking, right?" "Well, I don't know what that is yet, Devin." "Does it even matter?" "No," I said and hung up the phone. I checked my grocery store list. All that was left was the garlic cashews and honey. I couldn't find any small bottles and only could find a large jar of honey, and I decided to skip the honey. And maybe that's what ruined it. When I got home, the package wasn't on my front steps. It was sitting on my living room couch. Inside it were two items, a pair of eyeglasses and a pistol. The glasses came with some simple instructions. They had a camera in them. It looked as though, rather than Devin spying on me, I would be the one doing some spying for him this time. I messaged Eli Kuhn, telling him that I wanted to meet tonight to verify that the ritual was legitimate and not just some hocus-pocus show. As I was cooking dinner, my phone notified me of Eli's response. "My esteemed Dr. Lewis, I am delighted that you are interested in pursuing a relationship. I have no commitments upon this dark and delving evening, and would be well pleased to more formally make your acquaintance." He gave me his address, and I wrote back that I would be there in several hours, and so it was arranged. As I was texting with Eli, the garlic burned, and the dish was a disaster. I arrived at Mr. Kuhn's estate just after midnight, the gun tucked into my waist and the glasses hooked over my ears. I approached a wide set of gates, flanked by two torches with yellow flames dancing in the moonless night. The gates swung slowly open with a long creak, and I drove on until I reached a massive stone building, faintly lit by more torches. I stepped out of the car and heard all the manner of chirping and grunting coming from behind his house. "That's right," I thought, trying to let my rational brain push down the fear. "He said that he has a private zoo." I approached a large wooden door with an iron knocker in the shape of a crow. I shuddered as I grasped the cold metal and knocked, but no one answered. I kept knocking, banging harder and harder, a sound filling the night. At last, the door swung open, and there was Eli Kuhn, looking every bit as evil as I had ever imagined him. "Dr. Lewis," he said in a thin, barely audible voice, "you must excuse me tonight, sir. I'm not as quick on my feet as I once was, and you know, my assistant has recently taken a leave of absence." My stomach tightened, but I held my composure. "Yeah, right. Why don't you let me see her?" I said. "Of course. Come on in." I stepped in and looked around. The walls and the floor were constructed of stone, as was the winding staircase to the second floor. Sconces holding lit candles lined the walls, except where there were bookcases. "Follow me, Dr. Lewis," he said. We walked around the corner to a wooden door, behind which was another set of stone stairs heading down. As soon as Eli pushed the door open, I heard it, a woman whimpering in anguish and despair. I shivered and followed Eli as he took a torch from the wall and walked down the steps. A faint, unpleasant smell grew stronger as we descended, and it smelled like a pig pen. Then we were on a dirt floor. I could only see for the few feet illuminated by Eli's torch, but I could hear the horrible noises growing louder. And then I saw it. The hooves first, cracked and crooked, and then a leg, and finally the torso of the beast. Six pairs of human female breasts hung from its heaving pig belly. I couldn't hold back and vomited on the dirt. Eli then let out a soft chuckle. "Are you satisfied?" he asked. I steeled myself and took the torch from him, holding it up to the thing's whimpering face. There, behind a bloated pig's nose, were two human eyes full of human tears, full of human pain. "Can you turn her back?" I asked. "She will turn back, Dr. Lewis, but in her own fashion." Then I pulled out my phone and texted a message to Devin. "Do you see?" I got an immediate reply. "Yep, I'll be there in the morning." "I am very sorry," I said to the beast. I pulled the gun from my waist and cocked it. I saw the flickering flame reflected in the creature's eyes, and I thought a flash of relief. With a trembling hand, I fired a bullet into its head, and it dropped away into the darkness as my ears rang from the shot. "Now, we shall discuss terms," said Eli, taking the torch from me and turning back to the stairs. He led us up and into a kitchen where there was a wooden table and ancient non-electric appliances. "Sit," he said, indicating a chair. I looked around. There was a window on one wall. "I'd rather stand if you don't mind. Thank you," I said, leaning up against it. "Oh, to be a young stallion once again," said Eli, sitting down and groaning softly as he did so. "Well, what's the price?" I asked, crossing my hands behind my back. My masters have become very keen on you and your methods. They request your services. My services? Who are your masters? Should you accept, you will come to know them. Okay, well, what services are they looking for? Whatever is required. You are to be in their employ for 20 years' time. If you choose to leave after the hourglass has run its course, you are free to do so. However, none have so chosen to do so. Whatever is required. Do I get to live at home with my family? As you may have observed, I am currently in need of assistance around my house. This is where you will begin your apprenticeship. You will live here with me. My heart was pounding now. My wife, I thought, my son. I'm doing this for them. And that's it, huh? My family isn't involved in any of this at all? Nope, not in the least. Rather, your old family will not be involved. You will come to think of us as your new family, Dr. Lewis. All right, I said, reaching up into my right sleeve behind my back. Excellent, said Eli. The contract is all drawn up. You merely need to sign it. I then pulled the plastic baggie out of my sleeve. Not yet. It's not you, it's on my end. Before I sign anything, I want to see them. I want to see my family, and I want to see them here in front of me. I then sprinkled some dust on the windowsill. I understand, said Eli, flashing an unsettling grin. You do not trust the younger Minkowski? That's quite wise of you. I suspect that his hatred is pure, and he will be quite eager to do the deed and make the exchange. So we will wait. Good, because we'll be back tomorrow. And if he brings my wife and my son, I'll sign it. Tomorrow, then. I would see you out myself, but I'm not as sprightly as once before. I'm sure you understand. I do understand. I can see myself out, I said, wiping the last of the dust from my hands. The next day, I was back at Eli's kitchen table, this time sitting. Eli was at the wood stove brewing up some tea. I decided that I wasn't going to have any. I looked out the window, which was beginning to fog up with condensation, and saw an SUV pull into the driveway. I watched as two large men exited, Devin's bodyguards. One of them opened a door that Devin Minkowski stepped out of, while the other began roughly pulling passengers out. First came Mr. Minkowski and then Mrs. Minkowski, both with their hands bound behind their backs. I stood up and wiped the condensation off the window and peered out as another passenger was yanked from the SUV. It was my wife, and I hadn't seen her in 8 months. She was beautiful. Beautiful and terrified. My son followed behind her. I watched as one of Devin's bodyguards tied them to a tree, its branches swaying in the cold wind. I met the rest of the party at the front door. You see, doctor, said Devin, smiling, I brought your family. Once the transformation is complete, they are free, and you have my word. Hal, said Devin, nodding to one of his bodyguards, I believe that the doctor has a pistol on him. Would you do me a favor and pat him down? Hal patted me down and found the gun. He pulled it from my waist and finished searching me. Fair enough, I said. Now follow me. I then led the group into the kitchen. We all took a seat at the table except the two hired thugs, who remained standing. Are you prepared to sign now, Dr. Lewis? Asked Eli, sliding parchment papers across the table with a hand trembling from old age. What the fuck is going on here? Said Mr. Minkowski, trembling. No, no one speak. No one's going to ruin the surprise, said Devin. Will you sign, sir? Eli was now looking at me, and a line of sweat ran down my forehead. Ah, you know, it's just a bit hot in here. That stove, all these people here, it's too much. I can't think. Do you mind if we open a window? Devin shrugged. Hal, he said to the bodyguard who was standing next to the window. Open the window. Hal then reached to lift the window. It seems to be stuck, he said. Oh, come on. It's fucking hot in here. You have to bang it. You have to bang it, said Eli. Hal drove his palm up the window and jiggled, giving a hint of it opening, and then he did it again, and the window shot up and open. At the moment that he did that, a puff of dust flew through the air. I looked at Devin and watched as his eyes grew wide in amazement. He struggled to breathe, but no breath came out. He began to bang his hand on the table, and the room broke into chaos as Hal drew his gun and pointed it at everyone in turn. The other bodyguard rushed to Devin and tried to apply the Heimlich to him. Even if he had done it properly, it would have been useless. Devin was experiencing an allergic reaction due to his cashew allergy. As Devin's face started to swell, he stopped thrashing and turned to look at me, and I returned his gaze. But I didn't say anything to him. I let him die, right there in front of everybody. Last night, as my wife slept next to me, I had the first of what was sure to be many nightmares. I was standing in a corner watching Devin, as he was before the procedures, holding out a single flower to his dad, Mr. Minkowski. And when he did that, Mr. Minkowski slapped Devin's hand away, and Devin began crying. I then opened an ancient book written in a foreign language and began reading from it. Devin screamed and then transformed into a hideous pig, similar to the one I saw in Eli's basement. I walked over and stabbed it in the throat, blood gushing onto my face, and I awoke screaming. And all I could think of was that we reap what we sow.